Okay, good evening. Welcome back. We're going to, first of all, I'd like to begin by mentioning that several people have contributed money to tzedakah so that our learning this evening be le'iloi nishmas several people whose yard sale are tonight, including Chana bas Avram David, Shana Reza bas Aaron, and Yitzchak ben Nisanel. We're going to begin tonight by just briefly reviewing some important terms that we covered last week. This is not a complete review, but there are several terms that are going to be important for our discussion this evening, so I thought we would start with them. They appear on the top of the sheet. The first one is Yad Soledes Bo, which is, as you remember, is the temperature at which liquids cook halachically. This is not necessarily the temperature at which you'd like your chicken soup, but halachically speaking, this is a critical temperature in terms of determining when something is cooked, and also obviously becomes a question in terms of handling such foods on Shabbos. Meichel ben Drusoi is the point at which solids are cooked. And that, as you remember, we had a machlokes, we showed him as to whether or not that was a third cooked or a half cooked. There is an expression, ein bishel achar bishel. Immediately before the shir, someone just came over to me and pointed out that perhaps this could have been worded a little better. Over here it says, once something is cooked, it may not be cooked again, which sounds like may not meaning it is not permitted to cook it again. But really, in b'shachar b'shul means once something is cooked, it can't be cooked again. And as halachically, something can only be cooked once. And so therefore, in b'shachar b'shul is really a kula of sorts in a sense that once something has been fully cooked, we assume it cannot be cooked again in the future. However, it may be warmed up under certain circumstances that we will discuss. Finally, yesh b'shul achar afiyah, which means even after something has been baked, it may still be cooked. Again, what does that mean? It means it is possible to cook it, and therefore it is forbidden to warm under certain circumstances, the details of which we're going to discuss. So I would say that those last two descriptions of Ein Bishal Acha Bishal and Yesh Bishal Afiyah perhaps could be worded a little more coherently. So maybe I'll fix that on the sheets, but if you're going to walk out with a sheet tonight, you know, please make note of that. Okay, so last week we left off at the point where we were about to begin to discuss some of the important practical ramifications of some of the issues that we discussed last week, and that's how we're going to start tonight. We're going to talk tonight at first about the various, we'll call them kalim, which could be either pots or pans or bowls or cups, whatever the case may be, but containers which hold hot liquids, and discuss the status of these containers as far as their capacity to cook on Shabbos. So the first level, the highest level, the one that is most problematic, is what we will call a kli rishon sha'al gabi ha'esh, which literally means that first vessel, the highest level, which is still on the fire. So an example of this would be a pot of soup, which is on the fire on the blech, a kettle or an urn which is plugged in, a crock pot which is plugged in. This is a kli rishon sha'al gabi ha'esh. Obviously, the urn, the crock pot, is not literally sitting on top of fire, but it is sitting on top of a heating element, which is certainly cooking it as firewood. The bottom line is, we don't put anything, any foods whatsoever, cooked or uncooked, solids or liquids, into a kli rishon sha'al gabi ha'esh. And this is so for two reasons. If we're talking about foods which are uncooked, so then it's obvious why we don't put uncooked foods into a kli rishon sha'al gabi ha'esh, because that's cooking. There you're dealing over there with an iser min ha'Torah of bishul on Shabbos. So that doesn't require an explanation. But of course you may be wondering, if there's something that is fully cooked, so what's wrong with putting it into a kli rishon sha'al gabi ha'esh? So for example, if I have a soup that's on the fire and it's all ready to be served, and I have cold noodles in the fridge which had been cooked before Shabbos, so what's wrong with taking those cold noodles and putting them into the pot? After all, ein bishal achar bishal, and so therefore this should not be a problem. And the answer is, as far as the iser d'oraisa, the Torah prohibition of cooking is concerned, you're right, there really is no problem. But this is still a problem of what we're going to call and discuss at great length in future dates, mechzeik mevashel, which is literally translated as, it looks as if you're cooking. And as we know in general, and particularly when it comes to Shabbos, and perhaps I would say even more so, when it comes to the laws of Bishul b'Shabbos, we are concerned that not only that we act properly and appropriately, but we don't do things which could be misleading, which could perhaps lead other people who are not as informed and as knowledgeable to error. And so therefore, we refrain on Shabbos from doing things that even have the appearance of being bishul. So when I see a pot that's on a fire, or a crock pot that's sitting in its base, and I see somebody adding something to that, so I'm not necessarily thinking at any time it's cooked or uncooked, solid, liquid. It just looks like it's an act of bishul. And so therefore, without exception, and there are very few things that we're going to be able to say over the course of our learning without exception, but I feel comfortably telling you that this is one, and by all means feel free to challenge me now or later, but I can't think of any situation where it would be permissible to put any food into a kli rishon she'al gabe ha'esh. Any questions on that point? Okay. The next level is what's called a kli rishon she'husar min ha'esh, which means a kli rishon, the contents are still in that original pot in which the contents cooked or were heated up. However, it has now been removed from the fire. It's now been removed from the fire. So you're probably assuming that the pot is still hot. I'm just going to begin by saying the obvious. And that is that if it's not yet to lettuce bow any longer, then you can put whatever you want in it. We don't even have to have a discussion. Meaning, if the kili risho, if the pot of soup came off of the fire, and an hour later, it's still sitting there on the counter, technically, I mean, we can define that as a kli rishon shehusam and eish, but there's no reason to be machmir at all whatsoever. You could stick whatever you want in there at that point. I mean, you may want to test it first, but I'm assuming if it's been removed for an hour, then it's certainly dipped below the temperature of Yad Soled Espo. So we're not really concerned about that. However, what about the more common scenario where the pot has been removed from the fire and it is still Yad Soled Espo? And again, just to remind you, as we discussed last week, Yad Soled Espo is not boiling. It's nothing close to boiling. So you'll have a good amount of time after a pot of soup, for example, or chelin has been removed from the crock pot, from the fire, where it's still going to be hot. You can come back several servings from the crock pot, in and out of the dining room before it's going to dip below the temperature of Yad Soled Espo. So what can I put inside of a kli rishon that was removed from the fire? And the answer is I could put it only previously fully cooked solids. So table salt, for example, which happens to typically most table salts, some specialty types of salts may have been, they're dried, evaporated in the sun, but that's unusual. Regular table salt is considered to be cooked beforehand, and therefore you can place that into a kli rishon. Going back to some of the examples we mentioned earlier, you can take noodles or knedelach and put them into a pot which has been removed from the fire. That's okay as well. And even though, as we mentioned last week, it's true, the kli rishon is still piping hot, it's not a problem, because now as far as bishul is concerned, we're not worried, because I'm only putting something into there that was previously cooked, and it's not mechzeh kemavashel anymore, it doesn't look like I'm cooking, but good, because it's been removed from the fire, from the base of the crock pot. Okay? That's called kli rishon shehusam en ha'esh. Now we have the next level. What's the next level? What would you say? What? Well, we already said this. Now we have the kli rishon that was on the fire, the kli rishon that's been removed from the fire. What's the next level? Klisheni, right? It was a trick question. There's something before klisheni. Iroi mit kli rishon. Before we get to the klisheni, we have to transfer it. So the process of transfer, we're going to talk about the ladles in a few moments when we're done with the different levels. We're going to get to the ladle later. You're right. At this point, maybe chronologically, we could stick in the ladle discussion. We're going to leave that off on the side for a moment. So now we're going to get to the next level, which is called Iroi Mikli Rishon, pouring the contents of a Kli Rishon to a Kli Sheni. Typically, the way we will transfer the contents from a Kli Rishon to a Kli Sheni by pouring. It doesn't have to be that way, but typically that's the case. And so therefore, we have to talk about what is the status of the contents of the pot as it is being transferred, literally in flight, if you will, from the Kli Rishon to the Kli Sheni. Yeah?
I'm sorry, could you back up for a second?
Mm-hmm.
The previous case you talked about something you're putting into... something that's been removed from the fire, that I think the implication is that it's cooler than what you're putting into the pot. Let's say you're putting a boiling hot matzo ball into that pot. Is that a problem?
No, it's also okay. There's no problem taking something hot and putting it into a kli rishon that's been removed from the fire either. That's also okay.
So you're not concerned of it going from point from.
Raising the temperature. No, as long as everything is Yad Soled Espo or higher, then that's not going to be a problem. In fact, that's called, the Mishnah speaks specifically about that case called Pina Memecham Lemecham, transferring hot water from one kettle to another one. And that's okay. Sometimes people add water, for example, to their chalent. The only thing is, if you're going to do that, you have to lift the chelent out. You have to lift the crockpot out of its base. And for reasons we can't discuss right now, you have to probably hold on to it or come up with another way to do that. So I wouldn't actually. We're not going to talk about the specifics of that case right now because it involves too many other factors. But in theory, it would be certainly acceptable based on what we've learned so far to take hot water and add it to a hot cholent that has been removed from the fire. Yes?
If you have a collusion on the blech and it's on a fire on one side of the blech, would you be able to move the collusion to another side of the blech? Would that be messing
kibishul? Excellent question.
People from the outside don't know which part of the blech they
are. Right, that's an excellent question. So we're going to, the answer is yes, under certain circumstances. We're also going to hold off because we're not going to really discuss a blech tonight at all. But this blech is going to have what we're going to divide the blech into three zones. Zone 1, 2, or 3, or ABC, or Aleph, Beis, Gimel, however you want to count it. And when we get to that discussion, we'll be able to talk about that. But the answer is yes, in theory, the pot could be removed from one section of the blech to another, not in every situation. It may depend on the level of the flame and the size of the blech. But that could, in theory, be considered removing it from the fire. But again, the details of which we just can't discuss at this particular point in time. But I'm giving you my word that we're going to get to all of these issues. Yeah.
Just a clarification of Abby's question. So if the clear rishon is no longer yatzel le'ebo, you can't put a hot something in it.
It would be a rather unusual situation that you're describing, but you're saying a clear rishon is removed from the fire, it's cooled down.
I've kept the matzo balls on the fire. I took the soup off. It's 12 o'clock at night, I'm about to put everything away. I want to take the matzo balls off the fire, dump it in my cold soup so I can put it all the way together.
It would only be a problem if the temperature of the soup would be raised to yatzel le'ebo. It would be very unlikely. But then it would be a problem. But otherwise, it would not be a problem. So what about Iroi Mekli Rishon? Pouring from a Kli Rishon, what is the din? So once the contents of the Kli Rishon have been poured, and they are no longer protected, if you will, by the insulating walls, which, as you remember, we discussed last week, at least according to Tosfos, that's the difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni. The Kli Rishon is being kept warm by the hot walls of the Kli. So at the time that you pour it, immediately begins to cool down. And so therefore, we find three opinions in the Rishonim as to how we should classify Iroi from the Kli Rishon. The Rashbam learns that Iroi from a Kli Rishon is already considered like a Kli Sheni, meaning it doesn't actually have to have entered the Kli Sheni. From the moment that the pouring starts, it already has the status of a Kli Sheni. What that means, we don't know yet, because we haven't talked about it, but obviously everybody here realizes that a Kli Sheni, we're going to be more lenient than we would with a Kli Rishon. So those leniencies, according to the Rashbam, apply already at the moment that I start pouring it. So that would mean, in theory, that I can pour the contents of a Kli Rishon and whatever that water, let's say, that's being poured onto could apply all the leniencies of a Kli Sheni. However, other Rishonim disagreed, and they said no, that until it actually enters the domain of the Kli Sheni, so it's still considered to be a Kli Rishon, and it has all the chumros, the stringencies of a Kli Rishon. So generally, la halacha, we assume some sort of compromise. We assume that it's lower level than a Kli Rishon, because it begins to lose some of its heat, but it's not yet considered a Kli Sheni, because it doesn't have, once again, the cooling effect. You remember the Tosfos says, the fanus makaros, that the walls of a Kli Sheni start to cool it down, so we have a compromise. What does that mean? So the halacha, we say that Iroi from a Kli Rishon could be mevashel kidei klipa, which means it has the capacity to cook, but only to cook, the outer level, the surface of what it is being poured onto. Now, for the purpose of preparing a food for consumption, that's not really going to be considered cooking, right? If you take a raw piece of chicken and pour hot water on it so that you just cook halachically the surface, it's still going to be completely inedible. That's not really going to be very practical as far as cooking is concerned, but as far as Hilchos Shabbos is concerned, that's definitely something that we need to be concerned about. So therefore, to pour water, let's say, from a kettle or from an urn directly onto tea bags or a raw lemon, let's say, that's definitely a problem. However, you can pour it directly onto a container. Now, that seems to be pretty useless, but there's at least one case where it may be considered useful, and that's when pouring it onto a baby bottle. If you want to take the cold sting out of a cold baby bottle, you can take an urn, let's say, and pour. You could even just, you could... you know, push the lever, whatever the case is, whatever type of urn you have, so that the water comes directly out of there and splashes onto the surface of the baby bottle. This is true because, as we're going to learn in a moment, you can actually insert a baby bottle into a klisheni, so already we can apply that, because even if it's true that the water is, could be mevashel, could they klipa, in this case, it's just hitting, you know, the plastic surface of the bottle, so that's not going to be a problem. Additionally, a very important practical application of this is that iroi pouring from a kli rishon onto a liquid will not be mevashel kadei klipa. Why is that? So the logic over here is that when I pour water, let's say, into water, so it immediately is going to become dispersed throughout the entire cup or bowl that I'm pouring it into. And it's not, I don't view it as if the surface of the water is going to be cooked. So that would mean, also very important, that it would be mutter to take the chill, let's say, out of cold water by pouring boiling water from a kli rishon with one very important condition. And that is that I can't pour so much hot water that I'm now going to raise the content, the level, the temperature of the contents of the bowl that I'm putting into to higher than Yatzo Ledesbo. So again, just going back to the example we gave beforehand, the very practical application of this would be if a baby has a, if you have a baby bottle, you have milk, let's say, baby formula we'll discuss later, has been cooked already. So you have anything like this which is cold, and the baby doesn't like it so cold, you would be permitted to take hot, boiling hot water from a kli rishon and pour it directly into that bottle. As long as, once again, the contents of the bottle are not going to be raised to the Yatzel lettuce. And I imagine nobody would really want to do that anyway if you're going to then give the baby to the bottle to the baby, because that would be too hot to drink. But it would be acceptable to bring it to a temperature where it's warm, where it's lukewarm, or even warm to the touch, again, as long as we're not getting anywhere close to 100 degrees. So that's a very, you know, very practical ramification, very practical application of this din of iroi with kli rishon being mevashel only kadei klipa. Yes?
Can you then add cold water to that hot water to lower...
Yeah, you could do that, because the water technically is still cold, halachically. So you could add cold water. Oh, I'm sorry.
To the hot water.
Ah.
No.
Going the other way is going to be a problem. Going the other way is going to be a problem because you are going to be... You're going to be cooking the water, right? Because that's still, that water that you're pouring back into is still a kli rishon.
Okay,
we're going to talk now about a kli sheni, and then you'll have an out. But if that first, you know, you're still talking about the kli rishon, you can't pour anything which is uncooked into a kli rishon, and for all intents and purposes, we explain anything which is a liquid is called uncooked, even if it's previously cooked, because we hold yesh bishalach habishal b'develach. Now we're out to the next level. The next level is called a kli sheni, right? You would think that we've been in a long time ago. Right, 20 minutes already been learning. We're still only up to the kli sheni. So what's the din of a kli sheni? So as we mentioned last week, we assume that a kli sheni cannot be mevashel, meaning it does not have the capacity in halacha to cook. So if you pour something into a kli sheni, no matter what happens to it, no matter how, you know, tasty it may be to you, halachically it's not really considered as if you have cooked it. So that would seem to give us, you know, a complete... heter, without any need for discussion whatsoever, to put anything into a kli sheni, solid, liquid, cooked, uncooked, it shouldn't really make a difference. There's just one problem. And the problem is a Mishnah in Mishnah Shabbos, which is found in source number one, where the Mishnah teaches that there are certain things, that it's actually a very small category of foods which can be cooked in a kli sheni. They're what the poskim called kalei habishal. Kalei habishal, not to be concerned with kli, which is spelled with a chaf, but kali with the letter kuf, things which are literally easily cooked. The Mishnah over here gives a few odd examples, salted fish, heavily salted meats, and some poskim suggest that there are other kali habishal included, raw eggs, bread, tea leaves. The problem is, and this is actually a very practical, a very significant problem, we're not sure exactly what's included in the category of kali habishal. So that which just seemed like it was going to be the biggest heter in the world, you could put anything into a kli sheni, is now suddenly very problematic, because there's just one category of things that you can't put in a kli sheni, and we don't really know what they are. That's what's called kalei habishal. So therefore, we should still refrain from putting any uncooked foods in a kli sheni, as long as, once again, the kli sheni is still at the temperature of Yatzel Ledesbo. Once again, once it has been, when it is dipped below that temperature, you can do whatever you want. So, for example, if your soup bowl, and we're going to talk about what the status of your soup bowl would be, but let's assume for a moment your soup bowl is a cliche, you shouldn't put anything that's uncooked, such as pepper, let's say, the spice pepper, that is. I mean, obviously you have pepper also, but that is uncooked, and you shouldn't put that into a cliche. The reason why there is some discussion about a cliche, and it's not an open-shut issue, is because there are certain exceptions. There are certain things that we know for sure can be put into a cliche, because we know they're not Kali Abishal. I know it sounds a little strange over here, right? Gemara says cliche is not Mavashal, except for Kali Abishal. We don't really know what Kali Abishal are, but we know a few things that are not Kali Abishal. Most important in that list is water. Water, we happen to know, is not among the Kali Abishal. So that what that means is that you can always put water in a cliche, even if, going back to your question before, even if that water will now be raised to a very high temperature. So if, let's say, the opposite case, right beforehand, I was describing a cold baby bottle that I want to take to chill out. Let's say I have a piping hot bowl of soup, and I want to take the, you know, I want to chill it a little bit. I want to, putting an ice cube. It's a great example, right? Taking an ice cube, it was never cooked before, as far as I know. The water came straight from the tap. Now I want to take this ice cube and stick it in soup, right? So assuming, again, that the soup is a cliche-y, a bowl of tea, a cup of tea, whatever the case is, can I do that on Shabbos? And the answer is yes, I may. And even though I'm literally watching before my eyes that ice cube just completely melt, l'chora, it's getting cooked. But no, it's not getting cooked because it's a cliche-y. A cliche-y is not mevashel. It's only mevashel kali abishel. And we know that water, i.e. an ice cube, is not among the kali abishel. And so therefore, that would be acceptable. Other examples of kali abishel, these don't seem to be quite as practical to me. Olive oil, I'm sorry, other things which are not kali abishel would be olive oil, ginger, cinnamon, and tavlin, although it's not clear exactly what that is. It may or may not be tea, as we'll discuss in a few moments when we talk about making tea on Shabbos. So the bottom line is, just to review and then I'll take any questions you have, we treat cliche like a kli rishon by most uncooked foods, with some practical exceptions. I mentioned ice cube in a soup, putting milk, which was previously pasteurized, so that means it's been cooked, in coffee or tea, and sugar, which has been previously cooked, warm bottle of milk. These are just, you know, some practical exceptions, but for the most part, truthfully, we treat a cliche like a kli rishon in that we do not put uncooked foods into a cliche out of concern that really it may be among the kali abishal. Just one interesting question I'll just put out there, just sort of a conceptual question, and then I will take any questions you have. Conceptually, it's worthwhile to just ask the question, why should there be a difference between kali abishal and anything else? Because as you remember, we explained last week that the difference between a kli rishon and a kli sheni is not necessarily one in metzius, which means it's not necessarily one in the world of science, as much as it's a halachic distinction. You remember we pointed out that maybe Tosfos didn't learn this way, but we did explain, at least according to the Rishalmi, that Chazal said that a kli rishon is mevashel, kli sheni is not mevashel. Even though you can take it to a laboratory and do an experiment and you say, it's not true, I could prove it, we're not interested in that. Halachically, a kli rishon cooks, a kli sheni does not cook. So if that's so, then what's this kali bishel business all about? Right? You can't, either it cooks or doesn't cook. So a very interesting suggestion, which is offered by the Prima Gadim, is that you're right, that according to Rishalmi, when you cook kali bishel and kli sheni, it's not the malach of bishel, but it's the malach of makeh bepatish. It's a different malacha. In other words, there are 39 malachos in Shabbos. For the most part, we're just discussing here bishel. But the truth is, there are potentially other malachos which could overlap in any given situation. And here the Prima Gadim says, cooking kali bishel and kli sheni is not bishel, but it's still forbidden in the Torah because it's the malacha makeh bepatish. What I just told you doesn't really have any practical significance, but it's an interesting concept to think about, especially if you're thinking back to last week and a little confused why we should be making any exceptions whatsoever when it comes to kli sheni. After all, if it doesn't cook, it doesn't cook. Any questions? Okay, so we did. Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you. Makeh bepatish literally means to hit with a hammer. So no, you didn't miss anything. No hammers here. But it's actually a very general, very broad malacha. What it basically means is bringing something to a state of perfection, you know, finishing an unfinished job, fixing something which has been broken. In this case, we're saying taking certain foods, which are very light, flaky, easily cooked, and perfecting them, essentially, making them edible by doing something which would normally be considered, insufficient. So in this case, we apply makavach. Makavach could be applied in many other situations as well. You know, perhaps if you open, you know, certain kelim for the first time, if your glasses are broken, you pop the lens back in place and screw it in. That's makavapatish. These are other examples, nothing to do with food, but where you're taking something which is unusable, you know, broken, which is somehow dysfunctional, and repairing it would typically be, often be makavapatish. Yeah.
That list that you were saying that are not included, mm-hmm. olive oil, ginger, cinnamon.
And then there's a Hebrew word I use, tavlin, which normally we translate as spices, but we're going to talk about what that may be in a moment. For the moment, I will just tell you it's not clear what it is, so I'm throwing it out there. But
Rabbi, you were saying before salt was okay.
Salt, yeah, there are certain exceptions of spices
that
which are...
would finish something too, like
No, we wouldn't say that, you know, I like my soup with salt, and so therefore it's makom patish. No, otherwise we wouldn't be able to do anything. It wouldn't be anything where I can't...
Also, salt is cooked, so it's also in a different category.
Yeah, you know, no, I know, we're running to the many different points are going on at the same time. Salt is cooked, and so therefore you could take salt and put it into a klisheni. However, Ellen raised another point, and that is that you should not be able to put salt in your soup, even if it's cold, because... it's makom patish. So the answer is no. We don't say that when you prepare your food in a way that you like it, that's makom patish. The difference is that the Kali Abishal that we mentioned, that the Mishnah talks about, those are things which are really inedible in that state. And even with a relatively minor, exposure to klisheni, that's already enough to perfect it, or to make it edible. That's considered more of a significant transformation as opposed to just, you know, manipulating your food in a way that you
makes sense, takes they used salting in order to preserve their food.
That's correct.
They wouldn't want to eat it right out of
the exactly, that's correct. Yes.
Wouldn't the soup bowl be a cliche?
Oh, so now we're going to get to that. We're going to get to that right now.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that right now. Let's talk about actually.
And then you can use the salt.
Well, hold on 1 sec. We could use the salt anyway. Oh, hold on 1 sec. So, if it were simple as yes or no, I would put you out of your misery, but it's not. So. What with Kli Rishon on the fire, Kli Rishon off the fire, pouring from a Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni, what are we up to?
Pouring
from a Kli Sheni. So the good news and the bad news. The good news is pouring from a Kli Sheni has the din of a Kli Shlishi. The bad news is we don't know what that means. So you have to, that's only the coming attraction. So whatever the Kli Shlishi is going to be, Kli Rishon, pouring from a Kli Sheni is going to follow the din of Kli Shlishi. Note that's slightly different than what we said by pouring from a Kli Rishon. Kli Rishon, we said, when you pour from a Kli Rishon, it could be Mevashel Kedei Klipa, so it wasn't completely yet like a Kli Sheni. Pouring from a Kli Sheni is like a Kli Shlishi. What is a Kli Shlishi? So if you would want to run an experiment and see how many times the term Kli Shlishi is found in Masechta Shabbos, of course you can do it the old-fashioned way, you can take out a Gemara and look. And if you get a little lazy, you could type it in the computer and you're going to find that the term is not found. Kli Shlishi is not discussed in Hilchos Shabbos. It's not discussed in Laws of Kashrus, where we also discuss Kelim, Kli Rishon, Kli Sheni. The Rishonim, the major Rishonim, don't talk about it. The Rambam, the Rif, the Rush, they don't make mention of the concept of Kli Shlishi. So what does that mean? So the Mishnah Brura implies that there really is no difference between Kli Sheni and Kli Shlishi. In other words, according to the Mishnah Brura, the reason Chazal don't mention a Kli Shlishi is because there is no such thing as a Kli Shlishi. It's the same as a Kli Sheni, as would be a Kli Revi, Kli Chamishi. Once you reach that level of Kli Sheni, as long as it's Yad Soledis, but nothing changes. So you can transfer it again and again and again and again, but nothing is going to change on the ground. The facts are that whatever the rules for Kli Sheni are going to apply to Kli Shlishi. However, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and others, but Rabbi Moshe is the one who's often cited in this respect, and several Tshuvos actually comes to a different conclusion. And he says, no, a Kli Shlishi is not Mevashel at all. Even Kali Abishal. Says with Moshe, you could basically put whatever you want. I'm going to put a little asterisk there and say we're going to come back to it and say there may still be certain things you want to stay away from. But generally, no, a Kli Shlishi is free reign. You can put whatever you want in there. And even according to the strict opinion, it would only make sense to be machmer by uncooked foods that are known to be Kali Abishal. Meaning, we're not going to say that, according to the Mishnah Brura, you wouldn't put anything whatsoever into a Kli Shlishi, but again, uncooked foods, which we suspect are what we call Kali Abishal, according to the Mishnah Brura, you would not want to stick in a Kli Shlishi. According to Rav Moshe, you may. So this is very important, let's say, when it comes to making tea. When it comes to making tea, I'm sure many are familiar with the fact, I'm going to go a little out of order right now in terms of my notes. I'm going to come back to the ladle issue in a moment, but let's just talk about making tea. I hope there's not a reason that I'm forgetting as to why I did it in this order. I'm gonna jump a page or two over here and talk about tea. So how do you make tea on Shabbos? So we know there are, you know, three ways that people make tea. One is, I guess, they don't make tea. Right? I don't know. There must be some people out there who don't make tea on Shabbos. Maybe they don't like tea. So that's one way. The other way that people make tea is using what's called tea scents, right? So when you take essentially tea bags or whatever you use it to make your tea, and before Shabbos you prepare high concentrate liquid, and then take that liquid, which is previously cooked, even if it's cold at this point, and then add that to the contents of a kli sheni, you could make a very tasty cup of tea, really avoiding any problems whatsoever, because we already learned that you're permitted to take water, in this case the tea sense is basically water, and pour it into a kli sheni. That would be the more strict approach, if you will, because that's the one that doesn't allow you the flexibility of handing out, you know, a box full of different tea bags and telling everybody to choose their favorite flavor. Rav Moshe, however, felt that it would be permissible to make tea in a kli shlishi, even actually sticking a tea bag into it. Tea bags clearly are unprocessed and very fine, and clearly would be possibly what we would call kaliyah bishul. Interestingly, the Rav Zatzal said that his grandfather, Rav Chaim, would make tea with tea bags in a kli sheni, because he thought that tea was tavlin. Remember I said before, tavlin, get to tavlin. The Rav said that he thought his grandfather thought that tavlin was actually tea, which comes out to be somewhat of a big kula in a sense, that we have a masora that tea could not be cooked in a kli sheni. But even though we have a very, you know, strong precedent for that, the Mishnah Berurah and the Aruch HaShulchan and others were very opposed to this. So I would not recommend, unless somebody has a tradition in which he follows from the Rav, in which case, by all means, but otherwise I would not recommend doing this because it's really generally not done. Namely, the people don't make tea and tea bags in a kli sheni. They would, if they're going to do anything, they would do it in a kli shlishi. Just to state the obvious, it's not really much of an inconvenience whatsoever. It just requires one additional cup. Practically speaking, again, if you're using an urn, which most people, I guess, use on Shabbos, so the urn is a kli rishon, the first cup that you pour it into is a kli sheni, and the next cup is a kli shlishi. So if you have an urn and you have the water and the kli you pour it into a cup, you can then pour from that cup onto a tea bag, right? Because we already said that a kli sheni, pouring from a kli sheni, has the status of a kli shlishi. I've seen often people stick another one in there, which is okay. It's not the end of the world. There's one more cup to wash. But I think, you know, people sometimes assume the kli shlishi means you have to first transfer it to a third cup before you could even introduce the tea. And really, technically, that's not so. Again, all of this assumes that one is following the more lenient view of Rav Moshe, who allows one to actually make tea in a kli shlishi once again, because of his understanding that a kli shlishi is not mevashel at all. Yeah.
But based on what you just said, you don't need to go to a kli shlishi because pouring is already...
Well, it's going
to
end up in the kli shlishi, but correct. And we'll be calling it a kli shlishi because that's where it's going to land. Right?
So the urn is kli rishon.
The urn is a kli rishon.
Pouring it as it's going through the air, that's sheni, and then the kosher...
No.
But that's...
No, I'm not. I don't.
That's what I'm asking.
Okay, good. No, I'm not saying that at all. When you pour, when the water comes from the urn into the cup is a kli sheni. There should not be any tea bags here yet whatsoever. You can then take that, the kli sheni, and pour it. Again, if one is going to follow the opinion of Rav Moshe, who says that a kli shlishi is not mevashel anything, then you could pour it onto a tea bag, which is then sitting in that which will become the kli shlishi.
So, what was the rule of Yeruah?
What was the...
Pouring.
So I mentioned that pouring from a kli rishon is mevashel kadei klipa, and pouring from a kli sheni has the din of a kli shlishi. So what you just described over there would be iru mi kli rishon, which would be a problem on top of a tea bag. Okay. Yes. Right. So then we'll talk about that issue. We'll talk about that issue.
One other question with the tea bag. So all of us are saying, I do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
You can put the tea bag in, pour the hot water on it in the cliche, or do you have to have the water in there and then?
Either one is acceptable. As long as, once again, you're you're pouring the water from a kli sheni already,
right.
Not from a kli rishon. That is correct. Again, I'm not going to keep saying this again and again. This is be the last time I'm going to say it. All of this is assuming once again that one is following the more lenient position that says that you can make tea in a kli shlishi. And the reason I say that is because I know that there are still many Jews out there that don't make tea at all on Shabbos in this fashion. And that's a tradition that many people have, which should be respected. And we should just, we should be mindful of that. One of the things that I hope that we can discuss in a general sense and maybe some specifics as we go along, but hopefully before we conclude our learning together in several weeks, we'll just talk about situations that come up when you're in other people's houses, which are not always Hilchos Shabbos questions. You know, they touch upon many other areas of halachas potentially as well, and just general issues of respect and kavod habrios and knowing how to handle yourself in uncomfortable situations. But this is an example, I imagine, which is a very common example, that, like you just said, I make tea this way, I make tea that way, I make tea that way. And in all likelihood, hopefully, whatever anybody's doing, is based on not just precedent in their own home, but based on a tradition that they've received from the parents or that they've learned in school from teachers that they have, a halach over here that's legitimate. It's possible that somebody's doing something incorrectly, but hopefully not. And so therefore, we should be mindful that when it comes to making tea, there really are different schools of thought. And I know that I have family members that under no circumstances whatsoever would want to have any part of a cup of tea that was made with a tea bag on Shabbos. And that's to be respected. That's okay. But again, so we have, essentially two schools of thought out of here, both of which have, a very strong basis. Yeah.
Even from tea essence?
No, not from tea scents, from a tea bag. Fresh tea. Yeah. So we're going to get to the coffee in a moment. I'm going to come back to my notes and we're going to go in order. But so far, the two questions which are outstanding, I'm going to get to tonight before we're done. Let's talk about a ladle for a moment, because the question was asked, wait a second, the soup bowl, isn't the soup bowl a kli shlishi? So the ladle issue is a very interesting issue. The issue which is raised is, until now we've been talking about pouring the contents of a kli rishon into that which would then become a kli sheni. That's obviously the easiest way to transfer. That's easy if you're talking about a small amount of water, from a large cup to a small cup, or from an urn to a cup. If, however, you're pouring soup, so that's a very inconvenient way, and maybe even a dangerous way, to portion soup by just, taking a heavy pot and pouring it. So what do? We came up with this great invention called a ladle. So what does the ladle do? The ladle is immersed into the kli rishon, right? Because the pot of soup was on the fire, now it's been removed. It's immersed into the kli rishon, and now it's been inserted, rather, into the kli rishon. And now I lift it, and I pour the contents into the bowl. So what's going on over here? It seems very simple. Bowl is a kli rishon. Ladle is the kli sheni. I'm sorry, pot is the kli rishon. Ladle is the kli sheni. And the bowl is the kli shlishi. Right? Right. There is such... Certainly it would seem that way. The problem is that some raise the concern that maybe the ladle is not really considered a kli sheni for two reasons. Well, number one, the kli sheni, as you remember, we explained, is kli sheni, at least according to Tosos, because the walls of the kli sheni are cold, and therefore they cool down the contents. Maybe that's not so if you take the kli sheni and you immerse it into the kli rishon. If you take that ladle and you immerse it into the kli rishon, does it really have the status of a genuine kli sheni? Maybe not. Additionally, separate from this concern, a ladle that's being used repeatedly over the course of several minutes, I use it again, 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 so it actually does get hot. It gets hot to the touch. Certainly a metal ladle, if you stick it sometimes in soup just for a few seconds, but certainly if it's in there for several minutes in and out, you touch it, you'll burn yourself. So can we really say that that has the din of a kli sheni? So the answer is, it depends who you ask. There are different opinions when it comes to this. A big machlokes haposkim regarding this question. Some are mekel. Important poskim are mekel, including the Magen Avraham in Shulchan Aruch and the Taz. Others are machmir. And this is a famous stira. It would appear to be a stira in the Mishnah Berurah on this point, which is important because many in our generation have followed the conclusions of the Mishnah Berurah, particularly when it comes to Shabbos, which he is sort of invaluable contributions. So there's no real conclusive ruling on this particular issue. So therefore, if one wants to be mekel and basically say that I'm going to treat my ladle like a kli sheni, I would say that it would be best not to leave the ladle in the soup if you're going to do that. You have to remove it immediately when it's not being used. That provides a little more room for leniency. If one would be machmir, what would that mean? So it would mean either you're going to have to use another bowl, or it means that the bowl of soup is a cliche in it, which means what? You could eat it, you could stick your soup in it, but you wouldn't want to stick anything uncooked into the bowl of soup, which would mean a pepper, and perhaps challah, but perhaps not. I'll explain to you why in a moment. Perhaps challah, why? Because challah is baked. So I'll tell you very interesting. The Shmirah Shabbos Kilchosa is makel regarding this issue. I'll tell you why. Because he says there are two chumras over here, and you don't have to combine both of them. The question of Yesh B'Shalach HaRafia is a chumra. In other words, it's not clear to us. If something was baked, could it then be halachically cooked? So that's not clear. So even if one were to be machmir and say Yesh B'Shalach HaRafia, we wouldn't necessarily need to combine that with a chumra of the ladle. So the bottom line is, Sefer Shmirah Shabbos Kilchosa, he's makel regarding dipping challah in soup, as long as, once again, under the condition that the ladle was not in the soup for a long time. So you have to try to be mindful of the fact that you want to take the ladle out of the soup and not leave it in there.
You're also assuming that the soup hasn't cooled yet.
Yeah, all these, you mean in the bowl?
Right.
Yeah, but it probably hasn't cooled below. Again, Yanceled, as you remember, is, 110 degrees. I don't remember last week I told you that a hot bowl of soup is typically about 180 degrees. I mean, again, I've never measured this, but this is these numbers that I've been given over here. Hot bowl of soup can be 180 degrees, and Yad Soledes could be as low as 110 degrees. So it would be unlikely, I mean, unless you really like eating very, very warm or even cool soup, it would be unlikely that the bowl of soup would not be still Yad Soledes. But, I mean, it's possible, but unlikely. Yeah. Right. I have assumed that, because one of the issues that we'll discuss, probably not tonight, is the issue of hagasa, of stirring food when it's on a pot. Now, truthfully, it may not apply to chicken soup. It may not apply to a clear liquid, which means technically you could actually remove it, but does anybody do that? I mean, I don't want to put anybody on the spot. Actually, ladle soup out of the...
My parents, their water urn is broken, so you can't pump it.
Ah.
So they lift it up and they use the ladle to pull the water out.
But they lift it up. So the question is...
You can't.
Right.
It's like an actual...
I see what you're saying. For the urn. I understand. Right.
It's on the fire. Though.
Right. Right. So that's okay. That's okay by there. By soup, maybe others. We'll discuss when we talk a little more about the question of Hagasa. But that, I don't think that would make a difference here. I don't think it would make a difference. Because technically, I don't think so. I think so. And the same controversy with the ladle would exist either way. Yeah? I haven't seen that, but I remember last time I learned this, somebody said... Right. So, right, I think practically you're correct. I'm a little nervous about, posketing based on scientific observations. I only in this particular case, because we're talking about an area of halacha which is not necessarily based on reality. Please don't... misunderstand that, but in other words, once we've explained already that it could be the difference between Kli Rishon and Kli Sheni is not necessarily Mitzius as much as Halacha, I'm not sure. But I do remember that the last time I gave Bishul Shiurim, which for those of you who want to know, was in 2006, so someone afterwards brought us a plastic ladle. Do we still have that? Do we still use it?
Yeah,
still
have. Esther!
There you go. So, still on your mind. So, there you go. So it definitely doesn't get as hot as the metal ones. We still use it, so we can attest to that. But I'm a little weary to say that we can just write off the whole issue entirely. I think it's still best to just not keep it in. Yeah, it will get hot. And the truth is, it does get hot. But it won't get as hot, and it will cool much quicker than a metal or anything else that really conducts heat. Okay. There's another ladle issue, which I think somebody alluded to a moment ago, and that is that some would suggest that the ladle has to be clean and dry before immersing it into a Kli Rishon, because the cold droplets of water that were in the ladle when it is now reinserted into the pot, so it's recooked upon immersion. This is similar, Shiloh, by refilling teacups, let's say, or would you have some drops or moisture on the bottom of the cup? So in this case, there are a number of reasons to consider leniency. Number one, ein bishalach habishal b'davar lach, which, as you remember, that's a term we introduced last week, which means that there is a very strong basis for the notion that even by liquids, once something has been cooked, halachically, it is not a problem to recook it. You can only cook it once. So as you remember, in Shulchan Aruch, the Mechaber is lenient and the Ramah is strict, and we follow that opinion, but it's not as if we ignore entirely the possibility that actually in Bishalach, Bishalach, Bishalach. Secondly, this is what we call in Halacha, Psik Reishit Lo Nichalei. If you don't get all these terms down, don't be nervous, but for those of you who are familiar with these terms, you may appreciate just considering it from this perspective for a moment. You're right. Technically, there may be cold droplets on the ladle that are getting cooked, but I could care less about that. It doesn't make me happy in any way. I'm not accomplishing anything that I'm setting out to do. So that's what we call in halacha psik reisha de lo nichalei, which there's room to be lenient. According to some poskim, there's no issur min haTorah when you have a chatzi shir of bishul, this particular malacha. So, and iroi from a keli rishon is something that perhaps is not mavasha. At least that'll help us in the pouring case. So the bottom line is you have reasons to be lenient over here. The Chazon Ish brought down of Shimon Eider Sefer is mekel because we really hold the nebi shalach of bishul b'davar lach. He's mekel, and so therefore he says we don't have to be machmir in this case. Reb Moshe is also mekel in his tshuvos. Therefore, I would say that it would probably be acceptable to re-immerse the ladle again and again and again. However, if it's sat outside of the pot for a significant amount of time, and the droplets which you see are actually still cold, it would probably be best to, you know, shake it off first, maybe just wipe it quickly with a towel before actually immersing, you know, cold soup back into the hot pot. And obviously, again, this chumer would only be applied to liquids, not to solids. There would be no reason to be machmir when it comes to solids in this regard. Yeah?
Does that also apply to a kosheni with water for a tea bag? Taking, let's say, a cup, you're kosheni, then you're pouring it into a teacup, and then you're taking that same kosheni to take more water from the urn.
Yeah, so I think as long as you're doing it back and forth quickly, we're saying it's okay. But if it sits for a while, so the bottom line is if you see someone doing it, this is another time I'm going to say, if you see someone doing it, so they're in good company, because there are poskim right now that are willing to say, you know, you could be lenient for the following three or four or five reasons. Nevertheless, it would still be kedai to be, you know, to be careful and not to actually take a cup that's been sitting there, let's say, for several minutes, just completely cool down, and taking it and putting it, you know, pouring hot water directly onto the cold droplets that remain in the cup.
Wet cup.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So, if it's been sitting there for a while, it's probably cooler.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But if you're going back and forth, because I think as it was a question you asked before, going back and forth, that would be okay. You don't have to, you know, dry it in between. Yeah. Yes, so Rav Eider quotes the Chazon Ish, his makeup, because he holds that really, he says really we hold in bishalach bishul b'davar lach. So I guess when it comes, which means again, once water has been cooked, it's halachically acceptable to recook it. So because you're not really recooking
even
it.
Even if it cools down.
So based on that basis alone, he quotes the Chazon Ish's makeup when it comes to this. Rav Moshe rules that leniently over here because a combination of that, and he calls it a psik reisha lo nichalei. You know, those are, you know, two sources that I have quoted here in my notes. I have the actual tshuvos and pages. If you want, I can give it to you as well. I haven't been giving that to you, but I have it over here if you're interested in looking it up. Yeah.
The reason
is like this, because as I think we explained already, that even the strict opinion of Yesh Bishalach HaBishul B'Davalach would say that as long as the Davalach is still above Yatzaleta's boat, there's no problem at all. So when you're taking it back and forth quickly and those droplets are still warm enough that they're still Yatzaleta's, so there would be no reason to be machmir whatsoever. That would be completely mutal l'charchila. But once it cools down, so then you're right. You're asking why would I paskin against Rav Moshe and the Chazon Ish? Is that what you're saying?
I guess so.
Because I haven't brought down the opinions that are machmir. I'm just telling you that, you know, I'm particularly concerned that people know that there's a basis to be lenient when either this is what they've done in their own home or this is what they observe in other homes. So you shouldn't think that this is, you know, some you know, kula that, you know, that started over here. You know, he, you know, there's a basis for this, but they're not the only opinions. And obviously, someone raised the question, so there's potentially what to be concerned about. Sort of from the opposite end of the spectrum is another very interesting. I'll call it a chumrah because it's not something which is found in the Gemara, but the Maharshal was a commentary on the Gemara, has a commentary on Shulchan Aruch as well, has a very interesting chumrah. Actually, the context of the Maharshal, believe it or not, is not Hilchos Shabbos. He's talking about, in Yoredeya, talking about Hilchos Kashrus, but it has applications here as well. And that is a very interesting idea, and that's what we call a Dover Gush, which means a solid item. And he says that a piece of solid food that has been removed, let's say, from the pot or from the fire, that is still hot, it retains the status of a Kli Rishon even after it's been removed from its original source. The logic behind that being that, unlike liquids, let's say, when you pour them from one pot to another, from one bowl to another, one cup to another, so they continuously cool down for the reasons that we explained, the walls cool them down, and I guess just, you know, based on the laws of physics, you know, it's just going to cool down much quicker. Solid, just think in your mind for a moment about a solid piece of meat, you know, as it comes off the grill out of the fire, it's pretty hot, and when you pick it up and you put it on plate, it's still just as hot, and it's not going to necessarily cool as quickly. And so therefore, he said that a hot, solid item of food, even after it's been removed from one keli to another, it's still considered to be a kli rishon as long as it's hot. Now, what does that mean? It's been a kli rishon. It's not a kli rishon. It's not a kli anything. It's a piece of food, but it would have the status of a kli rishon. So that would mean that you would not want to pour uncooked foods or sprinkle, let's say, uncooked foods on top of that. So, let's say, a hot steak, which I know most people are not necessarily eating on Shabbos anyway. You have a hot steak that comes right off the grill, he would say you wouldn't want to take pepper and pour it directly onto that, because even though it's been removed, I put another plate, another plate, another plate, if we're saying it still has the din of a quote-unquote kli rishon, so I wouldn't want to do that. So this is why sometimes, really, you see this, people in your own homes, or you've been in other places, really from people, they have all separate sections on their plates, right? People sometimes do this during the week as well. That's, you know, you shouldn't see a rabbi about that. That's another problem. But people who are very careful to have a machitza on their plate on Shabbos, what's going on over there? You know, it's all on the plate. What's the concern? There's no cooking. So they're concerned that if I have a hot piece of meat or a hot piece of chicken that's in solid form, and now let's say I take a cold pickle, which is not cooked, or I take you know, some coleslaw, let's say, liquid drips and mixes in with the hot shallon, so maybe there's a concern. So is there room? So first of all, it's not clear necessarily that one has to adopt this chumrah. The Aruch HaShulchan is machmir. However, he allows for the consideration of other mitigating factors. So I will tell you some of them include that if this davar gush, if this solid piece of food was either cooked or was subsequently immersed, even partially in liquid, so then we do treat it as a kli sheni because it's constantly cooled by the liquid itself. So therefore, soupy cholent, meatballs on sauce, chicken and vegetables that were in soup, anything that can then be poured into or onto a kli sheni can be poured onto this. Also, I heard in a conversation I have over here in my notes with Rabbi Savolovsky 10 years ago, actually 11 years ago, that he said that when the hot piece of meat or chicken, whatever it is, was cut into pieces, as well the one could be makel. So, for example, if you make chicken salad with hot chicken, so it's at least a question. Based on the Maharshal, that should be a problem, right? Cut up a hot piece of chicken and mix it with lettuce, so that should be, you know, based on the Chumah of the Maharshal, that should be a problem. But since we're cutting it up into little pieces, we can treat it, like I said, with the leniencies of a kli sheni already, so there would not be concern as there would if it was still, you know, hot with the status of a kli rishon. Yeah?
I'm sorry, the whole liquid thing. Can you just go over that again?
As far as this is concerned, the davar gush?
If it was cholent meat in a cholent in liquid?
Yeah, so a soupy cholent. I mean, there are different types of cholent. Right, but if it's a quote-unquote soupy cholent, so that the meat was or still is sitting in, you know, liquid, so then when it's been transferred, it does cool quicker than if it were just sitting, you know, alone and it wasn't sitting in liquid, and therefore we wouldn't have to apply the stringent ruling of the Maharshal. So that would mean you wouldn't have to be concerned about pouring pepper on top of it. I'm sorry?
If you have a baked potato. That's
not. Yeah, but that's a good example. A baked potato, you know, that's like coming out of the oven, let's say. Right? You would want
sweet potato, then what happens?
So then, according to this position over here,
it's not just pepper. You're saying other things that are on your plate, if they're not cooked, it's a problem if it touches them.
Well, you know, touch, right? Well, again, I didn't say it's a problem if it touches. I'm saying that some people are careful to section the plate. I'm saying it's a problem if it pours on the ground.
So
if it touches,
more like pepper versus my coleslaw touching
Yeah,
it.
Correct.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What's the practical difference, though, of saying it's the status of a cliché and a cliché? We can't do anything anyway in a cliché, really, that's
But there are a lot of things that are cooked that you would. You're right, pepper's not going to help.
Can't you put in a cleavage on that's not on the fire?
No, but there were still things.
So it's not considered
right.
The potato's not a
right.
cleavage on the fire.
Right.
So practically, what's the difference?
Right. Practically, what's the difference? That's a good point. I'm not sure there is much of a practical difference at that particular point. Except for those notable examples that we mentioned, things that we know are not Kali Bishul.
Okay.
We mentioned several. Yeah. Hold on one second. You almost fooled me there because it's 9:20. Wait a second. A Kli Rishon, we said you cannot put anything in Kli Rishon that was previously uncooked. A cliché, he was said you could put anything that was cooked, right? Anything that was cooked.
Yeah, but are you saying a cliché that's not on the fire, you can't put something that was cooked?
Right.
Oh, so you're saying goes to the Kali Bishul, right? Okay. The
Kali Bishul,
right. So except for those, right. So except for those,
olive oil.
Right. Those examples you mentioned, right. Yes,
the
Chama.
Uh-huh.
Right.
Until it's sliced into little pieces, and then it's not?
Right.
Can I put it into a serving thing and then going on to my dinner, does it now make it cliché, or it's still a status quo? Is it moving to cliché at that point? It's not?
You know, I guess, again, if it's being cut up already, we said once it's being cut up, it doesn't have the chumra.
One slice, is it really still considered cut up, or I think?
Yeah, I think, like I said.
I don't know whether, you know, from a serving plate, you're saying it's still considered.
Right, it's still hot. If it's still piping hot.
Now when I take it and put it to my plate,
I think one,
is that a cliché?
I think it's not a question. Transferring the pot's not going to make a difference. Once you start cutting off pieces and you're putting it on your plate, so I think already then we would not have to apply the chumra of the marshal anymore. It's only when you're taking it out, when it's coming out of the pot, let's say, in that original form. So I have more, I guess, that I would have hoped to get to tonight that I didn't, which is fine. Just, we're not rushing over here. I just want to let you know what we didn't touch, which I hope to get to next week. First of all, I'm going to talk more practical applications of this as far as using certain condiments at the table and other related issues. Also, we're going to talk about instant oatmeal and baby cereals and baby formula and cocoa powder. I'm sorry, whoever asked about instant coffee, you could, if you want to talk to me, we could talk tonight. You don't have to. So this Shabbos, I know it's coming up. You may want to know about coffee. But I want to give it the attention it deserves. So we'll talk about that next week as well. And we'll touch upon all these things before we move on to the next letter. Actually, next week, of course, we don't have Shirkas at Shavuos, so I think on the calendar, just make sure, but I think we're supposed to meet the following week. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful night.